हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासादि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Part of 86, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives more details in his commentary in the same verse. He worships with the intention of destroying karma. His goal in bhakti is to destroy karma. He worships in such a way that his actions are offered to the Lord. He performs bhakti of hearing and chanting, but filled with offerings of occupational duties. He worships out of duty, having obtained rules for daily rites. He worships while performing his duties of his ashram, thinking that his worship is similar to his execution of ashram duties. He has the desire for liberation. The nine types of bhakti, three types of tamasic, rajasic, and sattvic bhakti, sakama bhakti, are successfully superior. Sattvic bhakti produces some sort of knowledge. When jnana is secondary and bhakti is primary or predominant, it is called jnana mishra bhakti, which produces shantarati, beyond the three gunas. If jnana predominates and bhakti is secondary, bhakti being a mere anga of jnana, then it produces sayuja mukti. Bhakti mixed with karmas, such as a horse sacrifice with a desire for material gain, with some offerings of actions and attainment to results, but not offering all of all actions, produces salokya, liberation, with happiness and powers. If one performs bhakti and offers some karmas without desire for results, it produces shantarati. Though rajasic and tamasic bhakti produces results, the performers generally get material results. However, the results will be greater than usual because of the power of bhakti. In terms of yielding devotional results, in some cases such bhakti will with time become pure bhakti, as illustrated in the following verse. The Lord certainly gives desired objects to devotees who request them, but he does not give in such a way that the devotee will ask again after finishing his enjoyment. He gives his lotus feet, which include all desirables, to those worshippers who do not desire them. So here's that you have the tamasic, rajasic, sattvic, devotional service done in these modes. So each is successfully better than the others, right? So he said the nine types of this bhakti, not meaning the nine processes of bhakti. This means bhakti in ignorance with ignorance, ignorance with passion, ignorance with goodness, then passion with ignorance, passion. These nine. So each is successively better than the other, right? Something gets in your nose and it tickles. Okay. Sattvic bhakti produces some sort of knowledge, right? And then when that is, but as long as the bhakti is primary, the knowledge is secondary, then you get shantarati, right? Same time as if you also get, if you do bhakti, offers karmas without desire for results, it'll get shantarati, right? Otherwise, you get this salokya.
We are doing the same. We are mixed with all those modes. We have promised to get your devotional service if we continue. But here, if until the end is mixed, so they get this celibacy.
I would say as this is their determination, just like here. Bhakti mixed with karma, such horse sacrifice with desire for material gain, with some offerings of action and attachment to results, but not offering all actions, produces salokya, liberation with happiness and powers. So then, that will get you to Vaikuntha. So in other words, proper performance of your duties, offering all those duties to the Lord, then that will get you into, you know, but still maintaining some desire for the something, that will get you into Vaikuntha on the same planet, right? So you see, that's why in other methods that the performance of your occupational duties offered to the Lord is actually part of their process, right? Though as you get more advanced, generally when you come to the Vanaprastha stage, then they'll start talking about this Sarva Dharma Parityaja aspect. You know, so that will get you more, you know, deeper into the process, closer to the Lord. Right? But now, if you're doing this Jnana Misra Bhakti, it will give you Shanta on its own. Or also when you perform your karmas, but with no desire for results, that will get you to Shanta. So basically what it's pointing out is the power of bhakti. So even when it's mixed with these other things, the results are very great. It either puts you into the spiritual world on, you know, on the basic level, or it gives you liberation, or it gives you material facilities that you can't get by other methods. So in other words, the bhakti is the special aspect. Right? That's the thing to gain. Does that make sense? So for many, that's what they want. That's what they go for. I remember it's the Madhvas, they want to have the same form as the Lord. So Swarupya is their goal. Does that make sense? The Madhvas, I mean the Shris, I haven't specifically heard them say what is the position. But, you know, it'll be something there in Vaikuntha. Right? Ultimately, one has to transcend all such mixed devotional service in order to reach the standard of pure devotional service, as explained in the next two verses, right? Which they will also mention themselves, but generally they'll only bring this out at a later stage. They won't deal with it early in the game, because they're basically working on the principle everyone has material desires, so become pious by engaging those material, perform your duties properly, connect them to the Lord how well you can, and that will bring knowledge and detachment. Having gained this knowledge and detachment, then when we discuss pure devotional service, which is considered more of a secretive aspect, right, then you'll be able to practice it more clearly. So either there is an understanding of just the gradual need for people to progress, or that it will take them much time to do this, or not wanting to... that anybody should offend bhakti, you know, like this. So whatever is their purpose, then they have that those processes. Just like they don't wear tulsi neck beads except for at puja. If they're sitting down and doing puja, they wear tulsi. If they're not doing puja, they don't wear tulsi. Sorry?
Why not?
Because they consider the position so special that you wouldn't want to wear tulsi just everywhere. So they'll make those comments to us, how can we wear our neck beads everywhere? But the neck beads are for us as mudra, and for them they do the branding of shankha and chakra. So anybody initiated does them, men and women. Right? So it's equal. If you want to get branded, hey, it's open. Okay? You know what I'm saying? But Lord Chaitanya gave neck beads, and if you want to put shankha chakra, then you do it with tilak. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur praises that, how you say, position of the Lord, that he was so kind. Yes.
Isn't there also the element that we are trying to make our whole life worship? So in one sense, we always...
No, that's there. That's there. But just from that general, because they will also say that that's what they're doing. You know? But it is a different realm. So because of the realms, there's a difference. Because they have that on reverence while we're working in sweetness. Though we're functioning in following the rules of Vaidhi in the beginning anyway. So we are worshiping on that platform. But then what comes is that they, Shankar and Chakra, so Shankar and Chakra are also the Lord's associates. Mm-hmm. So how do they wear them into the bathroom? So then once you bring that up, then it's kind of like, okay, we'll leave your thing alone, you leave us alone. And, you know, it's a nice day today. Yeah. You know, like that. So that's the thing. Because otherwise they bring it up, devotees don't know, because they don't know the technical of what mudra and all these things are. So then they'll come up with these things. Good. Does that make sense? So ours is a lot more simple in that way. Right, that way our rules and that are simpler, but the technicality of our philosophy is more. Right, we don't necessarily get as much into the arguing, because that some of them do very well, like Vadiraj and that, the Shris, that they're very expert at defeating Mayavadis, just taking whatever they say and pulling it apart, turning it upside down. They're very good at that. But the discussions just on the devotional service itself are actually simpler than how we'll go into it. Does that make sense? Okay, the next two verses. Okay, the standard of pure devotion. The manifestation of unadulterated devotional service is exhibited when one's mind is at once attracted to hearing the transcendental name and qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is residing in everyone's heart. Just as the water of the Ganges flows naturally down towards the ocean, such devotional ecstasy, uninterrupted by any material condition, flows towards the Supreme Lord. Right, so that's what Kunti Devi was talking about, is that kind of spontaneity. Pure devotion is spontaneous attraction to Krishna. Right, so you see in Dwarka they have that aspect of spontaneous attraction, but they like to express it through the rules and regulations. So that's why it's a mix of this majesty and sweetness. So it has that element of spontaneity, but it, you understand, so spontaneity can be there basically from Dwarka on up. And if you look at it in one sense, in Vaikuntha, it's not that they don't like doing devotional service, they're naturally attracted to it. Right, so this could apply to anybody, but the aspect of rules and regulations is so prominent there is no sweetness. Right, so he's always God, though they may be spontaneously attracted. Does that make sense? So that's also these higher stages of these Vaikuntha Bhakti, they may bring these aspects out. Does that make sense? So it's not that if you discuss these things that they won't appreciate. Just don't quote the Sanskrit of the Shloka Sarva Dharma Parityaja. Just don't do that. That otherwise they get disturbed. But if you discuss about pure devotional service, it won't be a problem. Good. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
What type of?
You can put that out. It just somehow or other the boys moved it and it didn't get put back in.
Yes, got it.
You can sit on it. Yeah, just don't eat it. We need it tomorrow. Okay? Like that. So wrong season for eating. It's like, yes. Kerala, there's a saying, if you put enough ghee, you can eat blankets. And it's the wrong season for that much ghee. So wintertime, then that's it. Yeah. Right? Like that. Govinda Maharaj used to say, if you don't have bhakti, put more butter. Then everybody will like it. Yeah, that's good. That's good. He probably developed that while he was in France.
Yes. Maybe machine cooking.
Yes.
Okay, so, but Kapila Devi is presenting what type of
Kuti?
No, Kapila Devi.
Kapila Devi. This is generic devotional service, but the point is because from it's the point of Bhagavatam, where it's already established Krishna is the supreme original person, then it's going to be about ultimately Braja Bhakti.
Yes.
But it's being presented in its generic forms that it can apply to any form of bhakti. As I mentioned, even in Vaikuntha, the idea of pure bhakti, the idea of spontaneous devotional service is there,
yes.
But there is no aspect of sweetness. That's the difference.
Yes.
Does that make sense? It doesn't have those aspects of sweetness. So then, you know. Does that make sense? So it is there, because even you bring it up to spontaneity, because let's say you have, the cows, the trees, and Vrindavan. Now, are they not spontaneous?
Yeah.
Right. But what's their rasa? Shanta. Right? So that's the whole point, is it just gets to prema. The Vaikuntha bhakti, that will just get you to prema. Sometimes it'll take you a touch more. Some of the intimate associates may be on sneha or like this. But that's generally only the very main ones. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily a whole group. Maybe if they have somebody who specifically is a follower, they may have, but you generally don't hear much about them. Mm-hmm. Right? Like Mother just showed up. You hear about her. You don't hear so much about her associates. Right? But there'll be hundreds or thousands of these elder gopis. And they all have that kind of love for Krishna, not as much as her, but you know, that's there. Does that make sense? So there will be persons like that, but it's not the main prominent element. It'll always just basically be up to prema, be the thing. So you can have that and just get up to that level. So it's not that spontaneity necessarily takes you beyond that position. You know what I'm saying? It's just the more, you could say, the intimacy is greater, the appreciation is greater, and the process is quicker. Yes. So pure devotional service is quicker than mixed devotional service. Spontaneous is quicker than Vaidhi. But it has to be real. It's not that you can just say that I'm spontaneous. Yes. Generally, whimsical is thought of as spontaneous. Because I'm whimsical, that's why I'm, you know. They say it's typical amongst the, you know, in the, how you say, I don't know now, but before, these Indian sadhus, you know, they would be spontaneous. Oh, why don't we do this? And, but we always do, no, but let's do something. You know, it's just part of the, it's part of that, what do you call it? What was it? He was like a prostitute, worshipped his master Narayan, Lord of the Universe, with cheating mentality, as tamasic bhakti, as medium grade. So, much of the time, they would specialize in that. You know? Or, you know, sometimes it would touch on the mode of goodness and ignorance. But it would have, a lot of times it would have that. It wouldn't be authorized, you know, the method. Because you see in the mode of passion, they're performing it so you don't get the idea that it's not authorized. It's not Kaitava Dharma. It's actual proper performance of bhakti, you know, in parampara. But it's for material desire. While this one, it has the aspect that's not recommended. Right? The mentality, the way of going about it is not recommended. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yeah. So that's that. There you see this kind of spontaneity, or you know, sahajyas like this. The spontaneous, but what's it all about? It's about that. It has that aspect of name and fame, but at the same time, it's cheating. And so it's just, it has all this material desire, and it has that cheating aspect. So at on a good day, they'd be bhakti in the mode of ignorance. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
You see, sometimes devotees regulate it, so it's not much about the feelings, but they do everything more or less.
But that's Vaidhi.
Yeah, and there are some people just who kind of become very excited about something, they do it, then fall back. Not that they don't perform bhakti,
no,
but
that's
regulated.
Yeah, but that's thick thin. That's an anartha nivriti, that's where one day they're excited, one day they're not, so it's unstable.
So Vaidhi is more stable and better.
If they're regular at it, then that means that they're more stable.
Even though less emotional.
What it's also, you have to see is it that the bhakti is more stable, or is it that they are just a regulated person? You know what I'm saying? Like, there are people's houses you go to, the place is spotlessly clean, everything's in its place, it's got a place, and it's always like that. You come at any time of the day or night, it looks like that. And they actually live there. It's not a museum. like that. But even the museum takes effort, right? You know, so you have to have people like that to run, to do these things. So that means if they join devotional service, they would most likely be very regulated. So then that aspect is not their weakness. Now, it just may be the actual mood of application, but they're very dutiful. So because though they're doing those duties to please Krishna, even though there may not be the sense of bhakti at the moment of doing it, they will get purified. Right? Because someone who's not performing it, it's not that they're any more regulated in the expression of bhakti. You understand? So someone who's new in the devotional service, they're unsteady. But if someone's sadhana is more steady, they'll be getting more benefit than someone who is less steady. Does that make sense? And then at some point, hopefully that will soften, and then it won't be as much about... So if it's about the rules, they follow them nicely, but their attitude or their mood is not hard. Their heart's not hard. That just means they're a more pious, kind of gentle-natured and dutiful person. But if by following it, their heart's very hard, they'll advance on one level, but it'll get in the way later because that compassion, another thing. I think that was, I don't remember the details, but the Acharyas were discussing that previously. I don't remember, that may have been Laghu Bhagavatam Rita or something. There was some discussion of this point. That being following the Vaidhi so strictly that one's heart becomes hard, then will be a problem, because then you'll always be proud that you're doing nice and others aren't. So it's not going to necessarily get beyond devotional service in the mode of ignorance. Or you want pride and fame in that, so it'll be a mix. Right? But that doesn't mean that following the rules is not good. It's just that you're supposed to do that without pride, without that sense of superiority. So the point is any mentality can be engaged. It's just a matter of, how you say, time. But there are recommended aspects. In other words, if you're regular and you're in the Vaidhi Bhakti, that's going to be better than if you're not regular. You know, one could say, no, but what if it's spontaneous? But we generally see the description that Rupa Goswami and the Acharyas quote in spontaneous is, externally it looks like very well-performed Vaidhi. Because the idea is, if you're on the spontaneous platform, it's not supposed to be known. So how do you hide it? By nice writing. And the point is, it's a good form to express to the Lord, because you have a conditioned nature. So the point, if I'm engaging my conditioned nature in the Lord's service, right? Spiritual world, I have a spiritual body that has that form because of my natural love for Krishna. So therefore, engaging the body then is part of my... directly part of my service, my devotional mood. But in the material world, my conditioning has nothing to do with me as a soul. Right? So then, my engaging the conditioning in the Lord's service, that's just performing my duties and offering those. So that comes into that Daiva Varnasha, which is pure devotional service. But at the same time, the form it's taking is that of piety. Right? So that proper performance, because that then people will just think you're doing everything very nicely. The mood is spontaneous, but the form is Vaidhi. Because when they say, oh, we're above the rules, but you say the soul is above the rules, but since when is the conditioned nature above the rules? You know, it's just like, I'm a pure devotee, does that mean my car can fly now? You know? I've always thought of that. You're just driving on the highway, you see some traffic ahead, you just pull back on the wheel, you just kind of take off, watch out for the wires and stuff like that. And then you just have to follow the highway, you know, like that. And then when it empties out again, then you come back down, like that. So, but it doesn't work like that. So that's the point is, it doesn't matter what you are, your conditioning still functions in the same capacity. It may function a little bit better, but the point is it still has its nature. So engaging whatever body, mind, and words you have in the Lord's service is the principle. So there's no such thing as whimsical devotional service, and then trying to palm that off as spontaneous. Otherwise, that would fall into Kaitava Dharma. That would be cheating. Right. Yes?
I think this word spontaneous can bewilder.
Yes. We use that because if we use Raga Nuga, everyone goes like that, so we don't use the term. You say Prabhupada generally uses spontaneous, very rare, uses it enough you can't actually, you know, connect the dots, but if not too much, that then people get all jumping up and down because they know some Sanskrit words.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, because spontaneous, as far as I understand, in this regard, is like your heart just flows.
That's what Raga Nuga Bhakti is.
Yeah. It's not whimsical.
It's not whimsical, yes. But spontaneous means that. See, it's like this. Okay. Let us just go back. Okay. Now, we have the spiritual world, right? And then you have its sweetest form. They'll be going to be speaking Braj Bhasa, right? As you come down into Dwarka, they'll be speaking Sanskrit, right? So you don't get a better language for exactly saying what you want to say than Sanskrit, right? And then Braj then will bring out that sweetness and things like that, okay? Now when you come into the world, material world, then what's going to come through first? Braj or Sanskrit? Sanskrit, right? Because if you reverse it, then what's on the bottom there is cut off here. So then that will be your, you know, the most technical language that can do all the different things that you would want to do in communication. Okay? Then that filters down, and then you get some people that have some grammar, like, you know, somehow or another, the Gauls have some grammar, the Germans have some grammar, but I don't know, there's something about, maybe it's the chalk or something, but when you cross over that little stretch of water there, what is it, 26 kilometers or miles or something, it's not a lot of water, but when you cross over that, somehow or another, the grammar goes out the window, right? And that, and you end up with, you know, what the EastEnders talk and all that. You know, wife is a blunt knife. Instead of saying boy, you say yob, which is boy backwards. You know, all kinds of interesting things like that. You know. You understand? You don't understand. Okay, so now you have that language. Okay. Now they're out there, you know, grubbing around and fighting over some rose or that for 100 years. And then when they finally, the dust settles, and then you have somebody there. And some point in there, you know, the French came along over there and took over like that and added a little bit of, you know, how you say, at least culinary fineness and something to do with dress and everything like that. You know, because otherwise before that, the Germanic was basically good for smashing someone over the head and taking stuff. Right? You know, that was the main thing. You know, when the guy comes home, you know, gets off the ship, and the wife asks, oh, how was work? You know, and then, you know, they, you know, how many villages did they pillage and burn and like that? You know, so then, okay? Right. Okay. Now, this language, then somehow or another, again, a, you know, benefit of the French Revolution, then the bourgeois, then they rise up. So bourgeois simply means a guy that's more sophisticated than the general guy, that he has more money. So because of the money, he's proud. And therefore, he thinks as good as the other guys that he just lopped off their heads. Right? So he can't, because of money, he can't tell that, no, it's, there's the elements of the nobility of education and not, that actually sets them apart. Right? Does that make sense? So then you have a language, since bourgeois means business, so that means that English is very, very good at business. Right? They probably have the most word terms in the world for business. I'm sure the Europeans don't have that many, because business is a job, it's not a lifestyle. Right? But somehow or another, when you cross bigger expanses of water, then they get even more strange. Right? Does that make sense? Right. So then when you get over there, then it's just business. Okay? And every, you know, now and again you have to change the language because that's old and you have to have the latest and the newest. Otherwise, you know, you're behind the times. Even though, you know, hammers still work, you know. You don't have to change the name or change the design or make the handle, you know, neon green or anything like that. It still does the work really, really well. But if you don't change it, then, you know, who's going to buy it? Okay? Right? Okay. Then, let's say they do get into it. Scientific terms they do. Generally, they depend a lot on Latin for that. And Yeah, and then you have also the other blessing that seems to also, somehow the French have added a lot to the world these days. You'd have to give them credit for that. Then you have the Age of Enlightenment. You know, that must have come out of some French cafe, that one. Right? You know, like that. And then, and what's it in and that university? Sorbonne?
Sorbonne, yeah.
Sorbonne. Like that, you know, where you, if you're not an atheist, then, you know, they'll throw you out of the school, right? Literally. Right? You know, so then, you know, these kind of things. And then you put all that together, so you have a language that's one, it's really atheistic, and it's really good for business, getting things done, technical kind of stuff, all these things like that. That's it's what it's great at. If there's anything left that's more refined than that, that's left over from previous times, you know, when there was the idea of the noble and literature and, you know, all that kind of stuff coming down from the Greeks and all these kind of jazz, little romance left from the French, you know, like that. And does that make sense? Something left over from religion, you know, don't steal your neighbor's donkey, you know, that kind of jazz. Right? So a few things like that. And that's kind of the limit of it. So therefore, don't be surprised that when English, the word spontaneity, it actually is a synonym for whimsical. So don't be surprised that these acharyas have to use these terms, because what else are they going to use? Right? Because if they use Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, they use more exact words, but then every sentence you got to look up one word, if not two. At least 5 words a page.
Yes.
Right? And that's A5 pages. So that would be 4 words a page, you know, or so. On a page like this, 4 or 5 like that. That's my, just like I just learned yesterday. I can't even remember. What was it? Some and a friend, he likes words, right? So he always comes up with some kind of crazy words. Okay. Cantillate. Never heard cantillate? Cantillate means that you're speaking something softly, rhythmically, and with a slight melody. So in other words, chanting. Chanting japa, you're cantillating the holy name. So then he was joking, you know, cantillate and be happy. Right? And then he has another one. Where was that? Came over here. There. Yes. Badinage. You have something like that, or badinage? It means to banter. Right? No, banter, of course. So bantering is like friendly, kind of pleasant. Arguing, or what do you call it? Yeah, light, playful banter or raillery. Like I joke and criticize you, but in a very light, playful way. And then you do it back, this, that kind of back and forth thing, that's called bantering. Right? So then that whole thing, that's badinage. Right? So would you prefer these kind of words? Because English has a lot of them. You know, they have to go back a few hundred years or 1,000 years to find them. But they're in the Oxford Dictionary, if you get the 16 volume. They're there.
It's very nice to accept words. Like,
yeah.
It's really like skimming like that.
Yeah, so that's why you should stick. I mean, you got close, because English are derivatives of German, but if you go to Germany, then it'll be more exact. You know, so in other words, there's a name about this long that means push, one word that means push the button on the door exactly in the middle if you want it to open, you idiot. Yeah, like that. They'll have stuff like that. That's how they put it. No? Right? Yeah. You know, they don't like English because it's not exact enough. But it does have its poetics. So you can see is that the translation from Sanskrit into English will be very poetic. It'll be sometimes more than in other languages. But it's exactness in philosophy in that they sometimes have terms, but they're so far out you've never even heard about them. Like that. So that's the whole difficulty. So it has problems making it accessible. So it means exactly that, because if you look at it, the root of it will be that. But the problem is how people use it. It doesn't connect back to the root anymore.
Also, the real meaning of spontaneity doesn't exist in modern society, other than whimsical.
Yes.
Being spontaneous.
Yeah. Being spontaneous means, while you're walking with your friends out on Saturday night and there's nothing to do, over a small bridge, and you just jump off for fun, and go swimming, and, so that's spontaneous. But so that's the problem is, but if you look probably back into the root, then, you probably find it comes from something a little bit more, just like mellows. Right, it doesn't. People don't even know what mellows are. Right, there's marshmallows. Okay, somebody after he's been, imbibing certain, herbs and all that, then he'll be mellow. That's like that. So.
We were reading Perfect Questions, Perfect Answers the other day, and my son asked me, "What does mellows mean?" And then felt like.
Yeah, because this thing is it's a taste and it's an experience and it's all these things that there's certain areas English doesn't have terms for. You can put together phrases, so that's what Jhumi Prabhupada does. Like there's no super soul. So he makes that word super soul doesn't exist. Prabhupada created that word. Godhead, that's a Christian term, meaning the God, who's the source of all the other powers, like that. But then they themselves are confused about this. So they have terms, but they don't know how to use them. Modes of nature, yeah. Right? The only mode is... Yeah, it means like your AC, what mode it's in, or, the ice cream on top of your pie or something, like that, so... Right? Call it a la mode, probably doesn't have anything to do with the French, right? Does it, or not? It does, okay. Yeah, so then... You never know if it has or not. Let's just try to make it sound fancy.
The origin of spontaneous is from Latin. It comes from of one's free will or voluntarily.
Of one's free will or voluntarily. So it's usage is basically of the free will. What we're talking about is the voluntarily. Right? It means the free will means you want to do, but it's not the whimsicalness of it. It's the natural flow of it. Right, so just how the Romans used it, that's another thing.
And that's from late Latin.
Late Latin, yeah. So not even early Latin.
Probably.
You understand? So when you start with the Greeks and end with, how you say Wall Street, then, you miss some things in the translation. Is that okay? Yeah. Otherwise, you could probably read Prabhupada's, read the Bhagavatam in German, maybe. Yeah, you'd be happier or something. No?
I don't know German.
Oh, okay. Pure devotion is spontaneous attraction to Krishna and hearing and chanting about him. It flows naturally like the waves to the ocean, unentangled by material conditions. Srila Prabhupada details the nature of this attraction to serve Krishna as purport to verses 11 to 12. The basic principle of this unadulterated pure devotional service is love of Godhead. Madguna Shruti Matrena means just after hearing about the transcendental qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. These qualities are called Nirguna. The Supreme Lord is uncontaminated by the modes of material nature. Therefore, he's attractive to the pure devotee. Oh, so that means the materialist likes the material world a la mode.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right?
Yes. Okay. And we're trying to move in the opposite direction. Right? Sans mode. Right? So. Therefore, he's attractive to the pure devotee. There's no need to practice meditation to attain such attraction. The pure devotee is already in the transcendental stage, and the affinity between him and the Supreme Personality of Godhead is natural, and is compared to the Ganges water flowing towards the sea. The flow of the Ganges water cannot be stopped by any condition. Similarly, a pure devotee's attraction for the transcendental name, form, and pastimes of the Supreme Godhead cannot be stopped by any material condition. The word avicchinna, without interruptions, is very important in this connection. No material condition can stop the flow of the devotional service of a pure devotee. So we're talking about here is that that kind of spontaneous devotional service means it's uninterrupted. Right? So that means it has to be on the position of nishta, and then from there develop. It doesn't mean that there's not moments of spontaneity in before one gets there, but it's not the prominence, so you don't give it that title. Right? So spontaneous devotional service means that's what's prominent. And because it's called pure devotional service, it would generally mean within the Madhyama platform. But it doesn't mean that there's not moments of that. Somebody wants to go see, you know, it's a festival, they want to go see the deities. That's spontaneous devotional service. But tomorrow they may not have that mood. Does that make sense? Or they get there and then something happens, they get distracted. And so it's not uninterrupted. But it's glimpses of it.
Still be considered
one yet? No, they would have to be steady. What we're saying is, I'm saying the neophyte can have those moments of spontaneity, but it's not steady, so you don't call it spontaneous devotional service. Just like we're saying, bhava, the potency of bhava is what extends down to shraddha. That's what gets us to actually be connected to the faith in the process, is actually that feeling of bhava. But for us, it's very minor. But even a very drop of bhava compared to the ocean of material pleasure, it doesn't compare. So there's an attraction there. Right? And then as that deepens, goes from shraddha into association with devotees, then into following the process, then getting rid of the, then it just gets deeper and deeper. But where you see its more natural form, but in a very small quantity, is in ruchi. That then it has more of that natural, spontaneous, you know, does that make sense? But it's not constant on transcendental ecstasy like bhava. Right? And that attachment is just glimmering there. But when that becomes prominent, then it's attachment. And then from there it moves into bhava. Right? So it's that same, so the spontaneous element goes through the whole place, but now and again it will come up. When it becomes more steady, then we call it spontaneous devotional service. Then when that becomes more again, then that's called bhava bhakti. Or then that spontaneity is on a platform of intensity. For us it's not that intense, it's just there. There's an interest. Does that make sense? You know, yeah. You know, it's like that. Yeah, okay. To say it's like difference between sprinkling a little pepper on your food and, you know, one of those spray cans of, you know, pepper spray. If there was no pepper, could you spray that on? Would that work?
No.
No? It'd have some other flavors there. It's not just pure organic pepper. Edible, right? That would be pretty good. You get a big pot, just spray one spray, and it's enough. Yeah, true. Okay, footnote 42. Queen Kunti similarly prays, O Lord of Madhu, as the Ganges forever flows to the sea without hindrance, let my attraction be constantly drawn unto you without being diverted to anyone else. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.8.42. So that spontaneous platform, as we say, is a principle of devotional service. But the point is when you add majesty to it, then it doesn't. That at that point, the spontaneity doesn't have that aspect of sweetness. So we're talking about spontaneity and sweetness, because you can't have spontaneity and vice, right? That makes sense. So spontaneity and sweetness in Braja Bhakti, that's what's unique that Lord Chaitanya has given. Because otherwise, spontaneous devotional service to Radha and Krishna not in Braja has already been given by Nimbarka Acharya. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates on the same topic. Thus, the meaning is, quote, because the mind flows continuously to me just by bhakti yoga with hearing and other processes beyond the gunas, right? So it means pure devotional service. The quality of bhakti is said to be ahaituki and avyavhita. Just as the water of the Ganga, even though turned back by the ocean's waves, heads into the ocean. The mind flows only to me through, though allured by me with offerings of kingdom, sharshti, shalokya, and other results, right? Because in the continuity of Rupa Goswami's defining the ocean, right? The ocean of bhakti, on the top of the ocean are the waves, right? And those waves represent the material facilities that devotees get in the process of devotional service, right? So, someone who's cross that sixth level of anartha nivritti means they're not distracted by those waves. So he's saying that spontaneous devotional service means even though when the Ganga comes into the ocean, those waves are coming the other way. No matter how big they are, the Ganga still goes into the ocean. It's not stopped by those. So spontaneous means it's not distracted by material desire. Does that make sense? Also, the example of the Ganga suggests that the mind of the devotee, like the Ganga, is swift, cooling, pure, and worthy of worship. What are bhakti's qualities? It is devoid of having other results in mind, right? Mm-hmm. So just now, let us say, that's someone like this. The devotee has to have this, but if they don't have that kind of mentality, then we would consider them not a devotee. Right? But then the point comes up is then Rupa Goswami mentions that only the fool looks at the Ganga and sees the foam and the mud and then considers the Ganga not pure. Right? So if someone's engaged in bona fide devotional service coming in parampara, then the point of noticing anarthas is only for the purpose of removing them, not for removing the position of bhakti. Right? So that's what we want to do, is that, and that's only for those who can do it. Right? So someone who knows, just like someone may criticize cooking, but if they don't know how to correct it, what's the point of their criticism? They can say they don't appreciate it. Okay, fine. But to make other points, then if they can't cook or don't know how to correct it, then what would be the meaning of the criticism? Right? They have to be able to themselves be able to correct it. Right now, if I'm a better cook than the other person, I can point out how they can correct the weaknesses there. Then I can make the point. Otherwise, then you just look at they're trying to do it for Krishna and this and that. And if there's no one else, then he's willing to do it. Hey, that's what it is. Someone else is better. They're willing to do it. Then make an exchange. You know, or the person likes to cook, make the other guy the cook and make him the assistant so he can learn. Does that make sense? So we have to be very careful about the fault aspect. You know what I'm saying? Because otherwise we go, it's all or nothing. But there's all, mixed devotional service means all the different shades in between.
Right? It's a big part.
It's a big part. Yeah. Yes. What are bhakti's qualities? It is devoid of having other results in mind. It is not like jnana or yoga. since it is independent of other processes and is itself the result. Bhakti is the process and bhakti is the result. That's the whole point. Our position is that of bhakti, servant of the Lord. We follow the process of bhakti, it gives the result of bhakti. So it's complete in itself. But you see, yoga, jnana, they require things, qualities that are required to have to practice them. Right? In other words, let's say a paraplegic probably couldn't do yoga. Right? So it'd be hard. So then what do they do? Right? So you have to have physical and piety and certain mental qualities to actually sit down. Because perfection of an asana means you can sit in it without moving with no discomfort. I mean no discomfort for 2 hours and 45 minutes. Then you can say your asana is perfected. If there's any muscle that's tight, there's anything that's there, the breathing, anything, that means it's not perfected. So you have, you know, a few more years to go. Right? So unless you can do all that, then you can't perform the Ashtanga Yoga system unless you have a certain IQ and you can sit there all day and read a book and you know, and not even notice that, you know, the time went by and you missed lunch. Right? We used to have one pundit here. He would completely forget about eating. You know, he just in the evening noticed they had to go to the bathroom. It was dark outside, and oh, okay. Then he'd go look for it. And I remember Sahotamar. Sometimes he'd eat every other day. It's just as not just now and again, but sometimes on a regular thing. He was working, eat every other day, like that. Sleep every other day, every 3 days. You know, so that's someone who can do gyan. Right? Not that it's there, but I'm saying you have to have material qualifications to do karma and jnana, right? But for bhakti, you don't have to have any material qualifications. Right? You know, I mean, what's his name? I mean, I was thinking of Shivananda Sen's dog. Right? He went back to Godhead. You know? So, yes. You're thinking about renunciation. So have you talked to your daughters about that? You know, they're not going to be upset.
No, I'm thinking about the term
renunciation. So you want to get into another grammatical or etymological derivatives of the term and the history behind it? And
like some weeks ago, and it said that it's important to be in a happy marriage because once one experiences this happiness, material happiness, and one understands, okay, it's okay, but there is something higher. So then one can really renounce. But on the other side, there are also, and then when one takes for renunciation, then one.
But that's where everything's ideal, and you have the piety for that.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't really lead to bhakti. It just makes it easier for you.
It doesn't lead.
Nothing leads. Bhakti is the process. Bhakti is the result. Nothing else can generate bhakti. Karma and jnana cannot generate bhakti. You understand? So all it is that if you're in a more renounced mood, you might look at Krishna a little bit more clearly without the muddling of material desire. But it's still, you have to look at it. There's people that are renounced. I mean, it's like, there's a name for it, a medical term of people who die of boredom. There was one king, I forget where, if it was in Rajasthan or Punjab or something. Whatever it is that he ever wanted, he could get. And at one point, there was nothing left to do. And so he just died of boredom. Yeah. He just died of boredom. I mean, I've heard of a few other cases. It's rare, but you know what I'm saying? So, but you still have to do something with it. So here is a perfect opportunity. He could have just taken up full-time chanting. So it wasn't that, you know, the Gaudiyas weren't around, or the Shris, or the Mutt. He could have taken up devotional service, but he didn't. So he had that window of opportunity of renunciation. And here's renunciation. There was nothing in the world that he wanted. Now, you don't get much better than that as renunciation goes, but instead of, you know, taking up devotional service, going back to Godhead, he just died. God only knows what he became. You know, some animal that's just always bored or something. You know? I'm not sure what animal it is, but you know, maybe a sloth. Yeah.
What?
Koala. Yeah. That's it. They just sleep. Yeah.
So renunciation is important in order
Renunciation is useful in that it helps one to see things more clearly. We get clouded by material desire, right? But renunciation is going to be in the mode of goodness. Because what are you renouncing? You can only renounce what's material, so that the best it can be is goodness. You can't get anything higher than that. Does that make sense? So that then those aspects of goodness can be engaged in the Lord's service. Does that make sense? It's just like this. If we go into a first-class kitchen, a good cook is happy because it just makes life easier. But if he goes into, you know, an ordinary kitchen, it still works because he's a cook. So it's not that the kitchen makes him a better cook or a less better cook. It just makes it a little easier than that. So in other words, knowledge and detachment just make it easier to perform devotional service because there's less to distract you. If you have the knowledge that there's nothing in the material world that can give you any benefit for the soul, then you kind of look at your material desires slightly differently. But because we're so habituated to thinking, no, I will get benefit from the material world, therefore, even though we've heard it, there may be some doubt. But as discussed before, doubt comes from the material world. It's not a spiritual thing. Right? Because we doubt, well, maybe I can still be the controller and enjoyer. You know, I tried this way, it didn't work, but maybe if I just move it over a little bit, you know, I keep moving it, then I get frustrated. Oh, that's because I'm trying to do this. Now if I just shift it all the way to the other side, now that will make me. You know what I'm saying? Someone grows up in a very conservative family, then they hit teens, they're very frustrated, then they just go completely crazy and insane. Like that, get on a ship, find themselves halfway around the world, you know, wake up some dock somewhere, don't even know where they are. You know, stuff like that. And they do that for a while, and then they come back, and then they go back, and then they, you know, go back to Oxford and, you know, finish their education and become a lawyer down on, you know, down in Westminster somewhere. You know what I'm saying? So they just go back and they try one thing, try the other, just goes back and forth. You know what I'm saying? You know, or you have the thing, you've done now that for a while and then you go crazy. You know, so I don't know of anywhere else in the world where there's the idea of just letting go means, you know, to get on a bicycle or motorcycle and ride down the road naked. Only in England they think about stuff like that. You know, like that everywhere else in the world, you know, what would you do? You know, you want gnats all over your body or something, fly, you know, squash fly. You know, it's like, that's why you wear clothes, you know. You understand? So this whole thing of going back and forth to conservative, liberal, you know, formal to informal, this, that, the duality, that's what the material world does. Goodness means you're functioning with knowledge that's based on authority. So renunciation is useful because then it makes it easier to choose Krishna instead of something material. But it's not that renunciation generates bhakti. Otherwise, if it was, then we would have, you know, something in common with Shankaracharya. Then our phrase would be, oh, you Hare Krishna, well, you know, this looks interesting, you know, so how can I get involved? And then what would we say? We would say, first take sannyas, then we'll talk. Right? But we don't say that. Why not? Because it doesn't matter. But like for Gyan, you're not renounced, it does not work. You can't have material desire other than you want to be God and do it. You know what I'm saying? You have to be comfortable to sit there behind books all day, every day, for for the rest of your life. You know, in places with no curtains and no rugs on the floor, you know, with other guys that don't dress very nicely and, you know, hardly wear any clothes. And if you can do that for the rest of your life, then hey, gyan's for you. You know, but if you like to get out and go around, you know, get out of the town now and again, then it's not your program. It doesn't, no. You can lead it to bhakti, but it's not that it leads itself. It's a natural. It's just because it's closer to getting out of the material world, that's why it's used in bhakti. Piety moves you upwards. Renunciation moves you upwards. But that has its limit. But bhakti is farther upwards than that. So it's because it's in that direction you use it. You know, if it's buckets, you know, going to hell, then you don't use that. Right? Even going in any other method to hell, it's not going to be worthwhile. Just buckets seem to be popular. Why, I'm not sure. But, you know, why not an old wooden wash tub? There's a lot more room in there. You know, I'm saying, can you imagine squashed up in a bucket? You know, that's not.
I think it's coming from the mining industry because the lift that you're going down in the hole is a bucket.
Oh, okay. That would make sense. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and it's definitely hell down there. It has been explained in the first canto that the first and twelfth stages of bhakti, sadhusanga and prema, should not be considered cause and effect. Footnote 43. The 12 stages are mercy of the devotees, service to the devotees, faith, taking shelter of guru, desire to worship, spriha, bhakti, anartha nivriti, nishta, ruchi, asakti, bhava, prema. Srimad Bhagavatam 1:6:25-27, commentary by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So, seeing that we get this shredded aprema in nine stages from him, then we can take it as authoritative. These are finer details. In other words, these fit within the nine. So the first two, mercy of the devotees, service to the devotees, that means this is before, prior to. This is going to be, though it's bhakti on the part of the preachers, it's going to be, what do you call it? Agyata Sukriti. On the part of somebody else, right? Then faith, that's taking. Then taking shelter of guru. When you take up sadhu sangha, then that's the essential point that's there. Desire to worship, right? So you have that desire to perform bhajana kriya, then you actually perform bhajana kriya in bhakti. Right? So there you have that one extra one there. Then anartha, nivriti, nishta, ruchi, ashakti, bhava, prema are the same. So those three extra ones means these two preliminary aspects, and the desire to worship, and then doing the bhakti. So it's not just enough that, okay, the faith is there, I've got an association of devotees, and now I do the devotional process. It has to be the desire to do it. Mm-hmm. That's going to be the driving force. Right? Because what is spontaneity? Spontaneity is that natural desire. So at least there should be the intellectual desire.
Yes.
Right? To take up the process of vaidhi. Because it's about desire. Mm-hmm. Everything works on desire. Nothing material, spiritual functions without desire. Mm-hmm. Right? Because that means there's prajumna, there's attraction. It's just whether that attraction is formal or not, or whether it's very serious or not. Does that make sense? But still, if you don't have attraction, you don't do something. Right?
Yes. This is a dynamic part.
Yes, that's the dynamic part. Means it's going to be the mercy of the devotee, service to the devotees, taking shelter of the guru. That's what's going to make everything else work. That's what brings about faith. So mercy of the devotee, service to the devotees, then brings about the faith and then shelter of guru. Then that gets the desire. All these things develop from association.
Yes. Sometimes this point, desire to worship, it's not...
It's not brought out.
No, we don't speak so much about that.
Because generally that idea that it's about desire, because generally most can't tell the difference between the desire and an attachment. right? It's just I want something, then they can't tell the difference between the attachment part of it and the interest part of it.
Yes.
So it's like the same. In English, Shelley, we use the word for both. Right? You have to give up desire. No, you have to give up. Means it's a matter of it has to be connected to Krishna. Attachment. So one is Prajumna, the other is Aniruddha. So the Prajumna aspect, that's the dynamic aspect. When that's there, then everything works. That's what Prabhupada said, when the spirit is there, then the rest of the process will work.
That's the desire.
Yes, that's the desire. Because if I don't have the desire, will I have the right attitude? No, so therefore, I have the desire, then the attitude's there.
Yes.
Even if it's just formally, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Even if it's just formally, I have that, then it'll work.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that's why if you have the right attitude, then the rest of the process will naturally follow, yes. And then what happens is that matures and that develops into spontaneity. Right, which then deepens into bhava, which deepens into prema. So that aspect is important. So it always says the association of devotees is actually the process. So we see is taking shelter of the guru, then before that is the mercy of the devotee, service to the devotees. So that's been mentioned, but we don't take it as two aspects of the process. And if you're going to do devotional service, it should be you want to do devotional service since it's a voluntary process. So that means then the desire to worship Spriha must be there. Is that something sense?
Yes.
So that way then you have the 12,
yes.
12 stages. Okay. So it's not cause and effect. Right, it's just devote bhakti, right? Because bhakti isn't about cause and effect; it's just what it is. Yes. Which a journey.
Ashakti.
Oh, ashakti. Okay, ashakti means attachment. Means to Krishna.
Yes.
Right. It doesn't mean attachment to hearth and home and. Your how you say, Swiss bank account and all those kind of things. Right? So, it doesn't mean in the material world it works on the same thing. By association and all that, then you gain faith and you want to be part of that. Then you take up the process and then you become fixed in it. You get the taste for it. You become attached to it and then you die. Right? Then you're born again and then you start the whole process over again. Yeah, same process. Just the thing is then you want to end up taking birth again and then starting from zero or continuing where you left off. Because that's the thing. The bhakti, you can take it with you. Everything else you cannot take with you. You know? We were discussing that here. If you could take it with you, then people wouldn't even write wills, you know, like that. You know, the family members annoy you, so, you know, you're quiet. And then everyone's thinking, oh no, he's going to take it with him. I guess we better become nice. So. Yeah, yes?
Also, you mentioned that somebody who is expert in something from a very small age doesn't mean that he was practicing from a previous life.
Yes, yes. So that means if you're born into Krishna consciousness, you've been practicing in previous life.
What's your material aspects?
Material aspects, too, yes. That they may have some expertise, but it also may be their lack of interest in the material may be cultivation from previous. So if there's no interest in devotion and no interest in material, then that's not a very good thing. But if there's, you know, no interest in the material but interest in bhakti, that's a cultivation from previous life. Of course, being a lazy person is also a cultivation, you know, but it's not necessarily a glorious one. Like, I don't know that there's ever been a book, you know, Lazy Men I Have Known, or, you know, 101 Ways to Be Lazy, or how you say, the idiot's book on being lazy or something. You know, it's not there. I don't think it's...
It's not true.
Yeah, that's right. Either got it or you don't, right?
Yeah.
Is that okay? So, asakti means that's attached. So that's the third stage within the... So in other words, mercy of the devotee, service to the devotees, that's going to be in... What did we just say? Agyata Sukriti. Right? Then faith, taking shelter of guru, desire to worship, bhakti and anartha nivriti, that will be in the neophyte stage. Right? Then nishta, ruchi and asakti will be in the madhyama stage, bhava and prema will be in the uttama stage. Does that make sense? But because it's all an extension of bhava, bhava is extended down to this mercy of the devotees, and it matures into prema. Right? So therefore, then these aspects being part of bhava, it just means that part of it started. Right? In other words, bhava is all that together. Then, you know, up to from mercy of the devotees up to asakti, then bhava contains that in a greater intensity. So when it's only then it's just on that stage. Then when it comes to service to the devotees, like I have mercy to the devotees, many people get mercy, they don't do any service. But then when you take up service, that's the next stage. Right? Then when you get faith, that's the next stage again. So it just keeps progressing. So all it is, but that means that when you're on faith, you have the mercy of the devotees, you serve the devotees. Right? Then it goes to taking shelter of guru, desire. So each, the other ones are there, just you add one more on. So that means that they're all there. So it's not that one dot drops and the next one comes up. So then bhava includes, prema includes bhava, rati. One's natural attraction to Krishna, that's already there. But now it's in its mature stage of prema. Rather than just an attraction. So the point is that you're going to get to there, you have to have that attraction. So there has to be purva rag or complete that attraction or complete attachment to Krishna. So that's why there should be the desire to worship, right? And then that will go into then where you get a tape, then you get attached, then it comes to the next stages, right? Does that make sense? Yeah, so it's just a natural progression. Take any one of them and it just gets more. Mercy gets more when you're doing service, it's more when you have faith, more when you're taking shelter. So each one of these gets more also as it goes. But it also includes all the ones before it. So it's...
Does that work?
Yeah. This bhakti is unobstructed, devoid of blockage by jnana and karma, sattva and rajaguna. This means it is beyond the gunas. It is explained in the 11th canto that the devotee, who is the abode of faith and bhakti, the happiness of bhakti, and other items are all beyond the gunas. So that'll be 11th canto when we get into this. In other words, this Shankya philosophy will come up again. Yes. The same kind of discussion, but a more technical. That's why here it's technical, but he's referred to there, it'll be more technical. So we'll wait till we get there to hear all the finer details. So hold on to your hat. Right? This is the 5th, so then that'll be 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th. 9th year. So, 4 more years. Means to complete 3 more years till you're there. You start. Okay. That's good. Good. So notice here he just mentions goodness and because jnana and karma have to be in goodness and passion. Ignorance doesn't generate anything except destruction. Right? So it's not
pride.
Even...
It's pride.
Pride, yeah. So that's generally when things fall apart. Mm-hmm. I think isn't there saying something like pride before the fall? Or Yeah. So there's all... Like that. So someone is really good at something and they're becoming very great, but as soon as people notice it and tell him he's great and he starts to think he's great, that's when it doesn't expand so much anymore. Just it goes up a little bit and then it'll drop off. Right? You know, so in other words, from a bunch of idiots in a garage to when people notice that they've just developed a multi, billion dollar, company, then there's a lot of difference. But once they got to there, you haven't seen that it's gone beyond a million. It's not now it's worth a trillion and then quadrillion. No, it's still just the same. Does that make sense? So it gets up to a point and then stops because of this. That's what ignorance does. Ignorance always... So there's no obstacles. When you say no obstacles, that means the ignorance is definitely gone. And then you have the finer points because goodness and passion means you're following the rules. So technically you can't actually be in really situated nicely in goodness or passion unless you're following the Vedic culture. Fortunately, you can be situated in devotional service. You know, that's mixed because otherwise then we might have a little trouble. Right?
Yes. But,
so, yeah. A worker free of attachment is in the mode of goodness. A worker blinded by personal desires in the mode of passion. And a worker who has completely forgotten how to tell right from wrong is in the mode of ignorance. Right? So that thing's, well, you know, that's just an opinion, and that's the mode of ignorance. When you present, well, you know, this is the Shastra, and that, oh, that's one way to do it. That's the mode of ignorance talking. Right?
There's one.
As it says, a worker free of attachment is the mode of good. Means it's a generic thing, but we're applying it within bhakti. So therefore, because we want to perform nice karma, then better situate ourselves in goodness. Worker blinded by personal desires and mode of passion, so we know that that's not very fruitful, neither materially or spiritually. Right? Because it may work good for us, but then what about everybody else? Right? And because it's about, let us look at it like just a subtle point. Okay. We can understand, okay, someone just has their own desire. Then we can see that'll get in the way. What about they desire to benefit their family? Okay? So now, but the point is we have our idea. This is how the family would be benefited. But it's the family is a category of entities that will be benefited by my endeavor rather than they are individuals. So how to properly benefit them? Because that would have to have an element of detachment and knowledge. So that would have to have more goodness in it. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Because otherwise, there's, you know, I mean, it's the standard cliche is, you know, Papa has an idea how everything's going to work out, and then nobody's fitting into it, and he's freaking out. But his idea is a great idea. Everyone will be happy and successful and like that, but the problem is that's not what they want to do in life. And then there's a whole breakdown there, and then generally by the end, you know, the movie, then somehow they work it out, and then it's all great, and the music, you know, lightens up, and it pans back, and, you know, I mean, it goes good. Right? But it takes the whole scene through. Right? You know, the son who wanted to be, you know, an actor or a writer, and his father wanted to be a real lawyer, you know, something like that, or take over the family business, and, you know, the fight and the whole thing, and the rejection, and then at the end, he writes a book that becomes an international bestseller, and now the father, okay, then you're cool. You know. Right? Yeah. That if you'd ended up in that part of Paris, where is it? The kind of out of the way place where all the actors and artists hang out. That's kind of
Montmartre.
So if you ended up there, probably there would be no reconciliation. Yes. So yeah. Right. Yeah.
It's a good place for Harina.
Huh?
It's a good place for Harina.
For Harina, yes. Is Moulin Rouge down there?
Yes.
Yeah, it's all that whole. That's Montmartre.
Yes, there are many tourists.
Many tourists. Okay, so that's a good area for Harina. Yeah. Okay, very good. See, everything has its value. But a worker who has taken shelter of me is understood to be transcendental to the modes of nature. So someone who's taken shelter, then they're transcendental. So that means to that degree they've taken shelter, to that degree they're transcendental. Otherwise that aspect is transcendental, and then there'll be residue of these other three. Right? But it's not considered serious in devotees. Right? Probably the bottom two aspects of ignorance are just devotional service, the mode of ignorance would be considered not very good. right? Because you can't tell what's right and wrong. Mm-hmm. Once you get up to passion, you know, like that. But even in goodness, then it's nice. But they've taken shelter so they'll have the mix of the two. So that's why you see there's the very nice devotional aspect, but then there's this other side that's not as good. That's just, that'll go with time. So unless their intent is not actually bhakti, then that'll be a problem. But if their intent is bhakti, even if they have these other coverings, they'll go away with time. It's just a matter of how much time.
Yes.
That's the point. Faith directed towards Atma is in sattva. Faith rooted in prescribed karma is in rajas. Faith residing in irreligious activities is in tamas. Right? So irreligious means it's not dharma. We make it up ourselves, or it's against dharma. Either you know it's against dharma, or you don't know and you just make it up, right? But faith in my devotional service is purely transcendental, right? So if your performance of your duties is because you're supposed to, because you as the soul have to do something, and so you do that with detachment, that is in the mode of goodness. Right, that's what we mentioned before. If I'm doing my duties because it generates the material facilities that I want, that's passion. Right? And if you don't know what to do or not to do, that's motivation. Yeah? Yes. Yes. But what do you mean by indifferent? What is indifferent? Because here, wait a minute. You want to use the word exacting, right? Okay, so what does indifferent mean? No, just the word indifferent.
I'm not sure. I think
how are you using it? What do you mean by it?
I mean that indifferent means that if I get it, fine. If I don't get it,
okay, so what's the problem with I get it fine and if I don't get it fine? What's the problem there?
Lose enthusiasm.
Lose enthusiasm. So you're saying in that state of mind you won't make the proper endeavor?
Yes, I will make. Yes. If I'm in the
end of the world. No, but what's the doubt? You know what I'm saying? In other words, don't change the perspective of your question while we discuss it. You have to keep it there. And then when that's clear, then it may bring up a different doubt from a different perspective. Don't change as you go, otherwise you can't get your bearings. Right? So indifference means the result's not up to you, so whatever comes, you're fine with that. It's not like the modern, where indifferent means you're neglectful. That's the problem. Is in the modern concept, indifferent means you're neglectful. You don't care. So you make there's no investment in the endeavor. But the Vedic concept of indifferent means you make the full investment performing your duties nicely. And full investment means body, mind, and words. But the result, seeing that it's not up to you anyway, then it's going to be whatever result comes is fine. You understand? What do you do with it? When you get the result? What's your options? You can go on eBay and sell it. Like that. Some recommend Amazon, some don't. Like that, you can set up you can take it to the flea market on, what is it, Saturday? When's the flea market?
Yeah, fish season.
Huh?
Season.
Too hot. Okay.
Yeah.
No people. Not enough fleas. Okay. Okay, but normally it's on Saturday? Okay. Yeah, in our city it was called Saturday Market. Yeah, okay. Then you can do that. You can have a garage sale. Problem is nobody has garages, so you could have you're part of the hallway, where the stairs, you're part of the stairwell sale,
Because
you know, how you can say you can pack it up in a bag, take it to Vegas, and see what you can get out of it there. Maybe you can increase it. You can barter it, you know, change it for something else, you know.
Is it connected to the verse number 10 of this chapter?
And which is?
When the devotee worships the personality of God and offers the results of his activities in order to free himself from the inabilities of creative activities, his devotion is
complete. Okay. So then, what's the question?
The question is, how do I know I'm not being fruitful?
Fruitful. Fruitive.
Fruitive.
Fruitive means I'm doing it for myself to get the results myself. Right? The aspect of, that's karma. Gyan is, I don't want the result, I just want to perform the activity without desire for the result, with the result of getting me out of the material world. Bhakti is, I'm doing the activity to get the result that's Krishna's. It's for him.
Yeah, he wants to get the result. I have a family, so I just give everything to the family.
What do you mean by result? So it means every night when you cook, then you take all your pots and go to the temple and just distribute in the courtyard. You offer it to your deities. So then why can't everything else be offered to your deities? Yeah? Okay? Yeah. Okay? Okay. So when there's the element of the soul, right, then there's sattva, right? Prescribed duties is karma, and irreligious activities is tamas. So basically, if you're not, as you mentioned here, if you're not performing prescribed duties, then there's a good chance where one is in the mode of ignorance. Right? So in other words, it's directed at the atma. So you're performing prescribed duties, but not to get the benefit of the prescribed duties, but to use as a medium of renunciation. Passion is you're using the prescribed duties to get the benefits of the prescribed duties, and mode of ignorance is you can't tell what's religious and irreligious, so what's prescribed duty, what's not. It's up for discussion, or we're different, or we're Westerners, or times of change, or, you know, like this and that. That's the mode of ignorance. Does that make sense? That's the difficulty in this part of the chapter, is that, how you say, as one devotee told me in Ireland, it cuts too close to the bone. You know, not too close, it's just very close. Like you said, very close. The pure devotion, the devotional service in the mode of goodness is performed with a desire for liberation. The pure devotees, however, reject all types of liberation. That's why I was saying before, is that this mixed devotional service will get you liberation, either Sayujya or Salokya, like that. And if it's even in the Bhakti, it'll get you up to Shanta. Right? Because it's not dynamic. But the point is, it's when it becomes dynamic, then that takes you beyond that point. Right? A pure devotee, quote, a pure devotee does not accept any kind of liberation, salokya, sharshti, samipya, sarupya, or ekatva, even though they are offered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He may offer them, but it's not something to take. Right? Because the point is are they useful in his service? So you're taking his service, but you're not taking the liberation. Right? And the opportunity is there to serve on the same planet as him, because that's where your service is, then that's there, but if you're doing your service. It's not about being on the same planet.
Yes.
Does that make sense? It's just like this. Just like the look at the difference. Okay, let's say you have two celebrities walking together. Right? Of basically equal qualification. Okay? So what do they do? Walk, talk, this, that. Are they pulling out their phone and taking selfies? No. But now let's say someone who's not a celebrity bumps into one of them as walking, then the camera comes out, this and that, you know. You understand? So what? So is the so for the celebrity, is he thinking, I'm walking with a celebrity? No, he's just thinking, I'm just being normal. So I perform my service. So wherever that is, if it's on the same planet, if it is an associate of the Lord, has a similar form as the Lord, has similar opulence, that doesn't matter. That's not the point. It's about the service. But if it's about those things, then that's what's not accepted in pure devotional service. So you have those ones that have that, and they may get that. That's why you'll have different levels of devotees, even on the level of Vaikuntha. Right? You have Shanta Bhaktas there, you have the those in the Dasya Ras, you have those who are less mature, more mature. So there's different varieties of bhakti that's there. Good?
Imagine that, yes, bhakti is the primary and liberation is secondary.
Liberation is just something that happens. Just like if you serve all day, the sun goes down. It just happens. It's not that it's not so even so much of a secondary aspect. It just happens.
Okay.
Like that. Secondary means what you're engaging. So in that case, if you're engaging that, then you could say it's a secondary item.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
But but it's never a goal.
Yes. Yes.
You know, like my frying pan is never a goal. You know, the cooking is the goal, is what you want to do. Right? 13. From Srila Prabhupada's purport to verse 13. It is clearly stated herein that a pure devotee does not desire ekatva, oneness with the Supreme Lord, as desired by the impersonalists, the mental speculators, and the meditators. And if you impersonalists were Mayavadis, then they're all M, right? Mayavadis, mental speculators, and meditators. To become one with the Supreme Lord is beyond the dream of a pure devotee. Sometimes he may accept promotion to the Vaikuntha plan as to serve the Lord there, but he will never accept merging into the Brahman effulgence, which he considers worse than hellish. Even if you get a bucket, right? Such a katva are merging into the effulgence, or maybe that's worse because there is no bucket. So you go to hell without a bucket, then that's even worse. Yeah. Okay. Such a katva are merging into the effulgence of the Supreme Lord is called Kaivalya. But the happiness derived from Kaivalya is considered by the pure devotee to be hellish, because there's nothing there, there's no relationship. Right? The devotee is so fond of rendering service to the Supreme Lord that the five kinds of liberation are not important to him. Right? So he's indifferent to them. They may come or may not. It does not. One is engaged in pure transcendental loving service to the Lord. It is understood that he has already achieved the five kinds of liberation. He's already situated on the transcendental platform, and the others are there. He's already an associate of the Lord on the same planet, has the same kind of features and the same opulences. Otherwise, how do they hang out together? Right? A pure devotee does not accept these five kinds of spiritual existence, even if they are offered. Right? So if they're offered, he doesn't accept. He just wants the service. So like Prahlad Maharaj. That's what we see is he is offered these things and he says no. So that's the uniqueness that comes out at that point. Right? So that means we have to clear all the ideas of all these other nine aspects of devotional service. Right? In the modes, that it has to be about pure devotion. Then when we get the seventh canto, then we can appreciate the pure devotion. Then it's a matter of the depth of the pure devotion until we get to the residence of Vraja. Right? Then having gotten there, then we will study the same thing again in a more deep fashion. Right? Then we'll be able to understand the subtleties of Chaitanya Charitamrita. Because here is you have the tattva or you have the rasa, right? But there the two are together. So that's why you need to know them both very nicely. And he certainly does not hanker after material benefits, which are all insignificant in comparison with spiritual benefits. When Prahlad Maharaj was offered some material benefit, he stated, "My Lord, I have seen that my father achieved all kinds of material benefits, and even the demigods were afraid of his opulence. But still, in a second, you have finished his life and all his material prosperity." So you have all this, but then you have whatever you're looking for, but then it'll be gone in a moment. Right? So you either you'll get bored and die, or you'll not be bored and die. Right? But in any case, it's all lost. Right? For a devotee, there's no question of desiring any material or spiritual prosperity. He simply aspires to serve the Lord. This is the highest happiness. So that's the aspect. So in this, if you're looking at it, the secondary actually is the activities you perform in devotional service. Right? We've been looking at it more as devotional service, and then there's these secondary aspects that we engage. But here, they're looking at it, a finer point is that you have devotional service, and even things like the facilities and that, that's secondary. So the devotional service actually is the attitude of wanting to serve and please with whatever facility you have. So it's not about the facility. Does that make sense? So Mother Jashoda, it's not about the house. It's just the desire to serve. So for her, the love for Krishna is primary. Her house, her kitchen, and all that, that's secondary. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the... Okay. If the pure devotees do not aspire... Does that make sense? So that's why we're even bought at the goodness, then that's dropped, and then it's pure devotional service, and that means all these other things just are... not important. So it's just about the devotional service. If the pure devotees do not aspire after liberation, why do they perform bhakti? The Lord answers in verse 14, quote, "By attaining the highest platform of devotional service, as I have explained, one can overcome the influence of the three modes of material nature and be situated in the transcendental stage, as is the Lord." In other words, the devotee aspires for transcendence only because this is the natural stage where he can associate with his beloved Lord. Right? So it's not about becoming liberated, it's about being transcendental to the modes, not because you're on the liberated state and then that position. It's because then it's so much easier to perform devotional service. Does that make sense? So that's all. It's not about being in the place, it's just... Yeah. Is that's where you can do your service. As Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport, the Bhagavad Gita 14:26, if one is not situated in the same transcendental position with the Lord, one cannot serve the Supreme Lord. To be a personal associate to a king, one must acquire the qualifications. Thus, the qualification is to become Brahman, or free from all material contamination. Because he's the Supreme Brahman, so you have to be Brahman. That doesn't mean you merge in Brahman. You're still an individual entity of Brahman. You know what I'm saying? Because Brahman can be merged or not. The point is that, but when you merge, you're merging into his effulgence. It is said in the Vedic literature, Brahmaiva sun, Brahmapyeti. One can attain the Supreme Brahman by becoming Brahman. This means that one must qualitatively become one with Brahman. By attainment of Brahman, one does not lose his eternal Brahman identity as the individual soul. No, he's situated in the platform of Brahman. That's the thing, is the Mayavadis don't know about Brahman, or the impersonals don't know about the individuality. So therefore they aspire after this because they think that's the highest. No, that's the beginning. What they think is the end, for us, is where you start. Right, so you could say devotional service gets serious after anartha nivritti. That means giving up the material world. So when you come to the Brahman platform in bhava, Now you can say, now this is where it's going to get serious. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So that means now you're on the same platform as the Lord. You're transcendental like the Lord. But you don't have that love for the Lord. Now, you're on the same transcendental position, so you're not affected by the modes. But you don't have the same kind of love that the Lord has. So you have to develop that. You have to come to the platform of prema. Right? So that means the Lord has prema for the living entities. Now you can say, now you're on that same platform. Now within prema, then there's all these levels, so then that's where then you, according to your taste, then you choose. Does that make sense?
I don't think time's up.
Okay, so stop here.